Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host today, Ryan McPherson. As always, we're broadcasting from the beautiful Regis Executive Suites here in sensational Sandy Springs. As a reminder, make sure you're connected with us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X. And today we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. You can also connect with me personally on Twitter, at Ryan Redhawk. All tweets and comments are welcome there. And make sure you check out our Facebook page as well, Business Radio X. And now it's my distinct pleasure to welcome to the Business Radio X flagship studio and Atlanta Business Radio two fantastic guests here today. First, let's introduce Christopher Chase Carey, who is author of the book Chasing Meditation. And how are you doing today, sir?
I am excellent. How are you, doctor?
Excellent as well. And you're a returning visit here at Business Radio. I guess we didn't scare you off the first time around.
No, you didn't. And I came back with a joke. Are you ready for a joke?
Go for it.
Why did the spider cross the road?
Why did the spider cross the road? No answer here.
To get to its website.
Ah, that's a good one. I use that one?
Please.
I may have to use that on my show here later today. So look forward to revisiting with Chase here and all his doings and how he's changing the world. But let's also introduce our other guest in studio. His name is Richard Pillay, and he is a leading learning consultant. How you doing, Richard?
Doing really great. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
All right. So a learning consultant. How long have you been doing that line of work?
Been doing it for about 10 years now.
10 years, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that entail?
So I travel across the country facilitating leadership workshops for our clients in major markets. And help our clients really become better at what they do in their businesses.
Leadership. Very,
right.
Very important to have leaders in this world. And some say you're born with it. Others say you can cultivate it. What are your thoughts?
I'm a little bit of both. I think there's some leaders that can be born with certain skills and certain traits. But if you're not willing to do the hard work to develop yourself, you're just not going to be as effective. So I believe those leaders that really want to work and develop can really make the way.
I think you have to want to be a leader.
That's right.
When you're thrusted into leadership roles and you do not embrace it, problems do follow. So leadership is something that also you continually learn more about and cultivate as you grow in professionally and personally as well. So we look forward to talking to Richard in great detail about all of his expertise in that arena. But let's turn our attention back to Chase Carey here for a moment. So let's revisit what has changed with you since your last time in the studio.
You know, I'm a little better looking. I'm a little taller.
I was going to say so myself.
And I might have gained about a half a pound. But
right, I wasn't going to say that.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. It's good. Just been busy, crazy. It's good stuff. You know, I'm very, very pleased at the response from being on Business Radio X. People really like it. You're such a trusted name. You're such a go-to resource for the community. And we really need that. You know, stuff changes so fast and there's so much, there's so much static and noise out there. How do you figure out what really makes sense? And Business Radio X is really the home for that.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And for those listeners who don't know, he's an author, a speaker, a corporate trainer, and a field learning consultant. But your recent book, Chasing Meditation, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And that is out there for people to buy. How can they find it?
Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. If you go into Barnes & Noble, it's not available in the store, but if you ask for it, they will order it for you.
Right. Ask for it by name, Chasing Meditation. That's right. And so what can folks glean from that book?
They can glean a lot. I take meditation. And by the way, it is specifically geared for the professionals, the type of people listening to the radio today. Mm-hmm. These are people that really want to accelerate the results in their life. I often tell people it's really an unfair advantage. It gives you an edge in business because, let's face it, if you can control stress, because stress comes at us unpredictably, mm-hmm. right? But when it comes in, if you can say, oh, isn't that interesting, and not let it affect your judgment or your mental or emotional capacity, you've got a tremendous leg up on your competition. But let's take it one step further. How many of us benefit by being more creative than our competitors? How many of us benefit by problem solving for our customers better than our competitors? Well, often creativity and problem solving may come in dreams. Mm-hmm. They may come in the shower. They may come when we're walking in nature. And that's great. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much of the day we spend in the shower, we spend sleeping, or we spend walking in nature. So If you'd like to be able to do it on demand, that's really what professional meditation does for you.
That's good. And that's a skill that you can learn to use and incorporate into your daily life. But, you know, some of the pushback that we've heard since your last visit here, for those who are thinking about adopting meditation, that it may be a little bit on the fringe element of things. And they may, their friends may look at them differently, or their coworkers may feel differently when they say they're meditating. What advice would you give someone who is battling with those issues?
I'm like, good for you, man. You know, is Elon Musk on the edge? You know, he's invented the Tesla. He's got SpaceX. Was Richard Branson on the edge? He's going to fly us into space. Was Nikola Tesla on the edge? He was so much on the edge. We are just learning about him in history. Yeah. So yeah, be on the edge. I was talking to a senior partner at one of the big four accounting firms on Friday, and he had the exact same concerns. And I said, you know, you kind of got to gut it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen is people are going to slowly see that your results are better than everybody else's. And they're going to also see that when things hit the fan, I don't think I can use that word, that you're going to be standing there totally calm and you're going to be able to direct the ship where it wants to go. So yeah, you're going to feel a little goofy. You're going to feel a little stupid.
Yep.
When I was in the corporate world, people would run down to HR, and I have total respect for HR, and they're like, why is Chase Carey asleep in his office?
So yeah, right.
you gotta kind of be ready for that.
Right. And it's just like anything, you're going to embrace it, and people who don't know about it are going to try to detract you from that.
Exactly.
So, but don't let that, you know, keep you from going forward. Yeah. And cavolt, you know, learning to be, you know, a better you is kind of what you're
sure.
learning to do.
Well, you know, I think I learned this from Donald Trump, but not that he and I are buds, but I read his books. One of the most significant things he ever taught was people that are very successful need to learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
People that are only comfortable being comfortable, they're the people that drive 55 in the left-hand lane.
That's right. And you kind of get away from them because they're going too slow. And so that kind of brings back Richard into the conversation here about leadership, you know, being comfortable, being uncomfortable. Is that some of the things that you teach, or what are some of the things you teach in your leadership?
Sure, absolutely. Well, one of the principles that we teach is something called the leadership challenge. It's a research-based theory on leadership built by Jim Kuzis and Barry Posner. And they are leading researchers, professionals, academics. They've done a lot of work in the area of leadership, and even studying leadership for the past 30 years. And one of the principles they talk about with exemplary leaders is a theme called challenge the process. And that means that leaders have to get uncomfortable. They've got to be willing to ask the questions that no one else is willing to ask, and to be willing to really continue to push that envelope. And the answer to a leader of, well, this is just the way we've always done it, it's just not good enough.
Right.
And so to do that, you have to be uncomfortable. You have to be willing to ask those tough questions.
And try new things.
Absolutely.
Right? And communicate that, though. I think
that's
communication
right.
is such a huge part of being a good leader.
Absolutely.
Where are some of the things, or where are some of the places you see that leaders fail when it comes to communicating?
Certainly, I think one of the biggest areas is the area of not communicating enough, where it comes to terms to their vision, when it comes in terms of where we're going and the reasons why we do what we're doing. That's a huge part of it. You know, about a year ago, I saw an article on Yahoo and didn't read the rest of the article, but the headline really caught my attention. The headline was worded this way. It said, uncertainty fuels speculation. And I said, if I've seen a great principle, that's one right there. Uncertainty
right.
fuels speculation. As a leader, we have to control the narrative. And I don't mean that in some kind of media state-run way,
right.
but we have to really control the dialogue. We have to continue to communicate. If we don't, someone else is going to fill in that communication. It's going to be filled in around the water cooler in our organizations.
Particularly when it comes to the company vision.
Absolutely.
Or the company's mission.
That's right.
And making sure that trickles down to every person within the organization.
That's right.
Some people say that, that over-communication, though.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're saying it's okay to communicate your vision, your mission, more than it is not to communicate.
You know, they say vision leaks. It's like a bucket you're carrying with a bunch of holes in it. The moment you talk about vision, you walk away, people are already questioning what is meant by that, where we're going to do and how we're going to get there. And so as leaders, we constantly have to communicate and communicate purposely, but we also have to communicate just on the cuff. In other words, it's not just enough for us to get up in front of a podium one day and say, this is our vision. It's what you do as a leader. How do you model the way as a leader on a daily basis? It's what you talk about down the hallway. It's what you talk about at a lunchroom. You know, it's not just a one-time thing where you stand up and give a formal talk on vision. It's got to be constantly flowing through you as a leader. And that's where that over-communication is certainly okay to do.
Yes.
Richard, you and I were brainstorming the other day, mm-hmm. and you told me something very, very interesting. It was about lining the values of an organization with the values of the employees, and that sometimes those values may not seem to align, but they really do align. Can you talk a little bit about that and the process you use for business leaders?
Sure. There was a study done where they asked about commitment and engagement in organizations, and they found that the highest levels of engagement came when employees knew their values, they were clear on their personal values, but they were also very clear on the company values. And where those, that clarity came in, that led to one of the highest levels of commitment and engagement in organization. Interestingly, though, on the other side of that study, they found that the lowest levels of engagement came for those who were highly clear on what the organization's values were, but were unclear on their personal values. So in other words, I could work for an organization and be very clear on the mission and vision and values, and yet, if I'm not clear on my own personal values, that would lead to very low levels of engagement. So the second highest level they found was when you were clear on your personal values, even if you were unclear on the company values. And what that showed leaders through the study was that if I were to focus somewhere, it would be to help my people know what their personal values are and then help them see how they can live those personal values in our corporate setting.
So, I mean, that sounds kind of Google-esque. Is that really a business leader's job to help employees figure out what their values are?
You know, good leaders get to know their people on a personal basis. Great leaders go a step further and get to know about their values. Mm-hmm.
You said one other thing to me that I'm losing a little sleep on this, but you said that fun can be a value.
Absolutely.
Again, is that just a Google thing or?
Not at all. So I tell the story often that one of my colleagues I've known for many, many years, in fact, a little over 15 years, I've known a lot about her. I know that she loves to have fun. She brings fun to the work organization. And yet when we did an activity in our organization where we asked about personal values, what our top five values were, she listed fun. And that was a surprise to me because I've known this person for a number of years, but I didn't realize that fun could be a value. And yet when I started to really think about our team dynamics in this particular organization, I realized that I take myself too seriously sometimes. And so this person, by bringing fun to the organization, really helps me to take that step back and look at the bigger picture and realizing that that brings value to the organization. And so because I value this person so much, I'm willing to block and tackle to make sure that we always have a space where she can live out that value of fun. Because let's face it, if you can't live out that value, whatever that value is, in her case, fun is one of those values, she'll take her talents elsewhere.
That's right. And fun certainly can be a value. You know, I have an Army background and leadership is certainly important in the military. Absolutely. And some of the best leaders I had were fun leaders, mm-hmm. right? And not all, wow. only at work, but outside
that
of work
really
too.
That really surprises me.
Yeah, in the Army.
I cannot imagine.
Because everything's so serious all the time. Right. And that little bit of fun element takes his leadership effectiveness to a whole nother level.
That's right.
And whether you're a general or a staff sergeant or somewhere in between, that fun, I agree. And I'm also a big guy into CrossFit. That's one of their number one missions is have fun while getting fit.
That's great.
And so they make it fun for all of us. And that resonates to all the affiliate owners elsewhere. So not the first time I've heard it, but certainly is resonating with me here today because I've experienced it too.
That's right.
And so these are some of the things you teach as you're a consultant. What are some of the other core principles a leader must have?
So five practices that I really feel that are really key for leaders, and I found these in Leadership Challenge. I think they really resonate well with me. They resonate well with any leader that I work with, and that is leaders model the way. And we say that in our culture a lot of times, walk the walk. And
Talk the talk.
Exactly.
Right.
The leaders also want to inspire vision, going back to that talk about vision. And vision, again, not being that one mantra that's on the wall framed up nicely, but what do you talk about vision? When do you talk about vision? What is our vision? Where are we going? The third thing is leaders challenge the process. We said leaders are uncomfortable and willing to get uncomfortable. Fourthly, leaders want to also enable others to act. In other words, great leaders realize that we can't do it on our own. We have to work with others. We have to get the work done. And finally, the truth is that leaders need to encourage the heart. We have to encourage people. People need to know that their heart and minds are connected, that they are making a difference, whatever work they're doing. And leaders really need to do a good job there. Leaders can't motivate, but leaders can create a culture in which motivation happens.
And so five key fundamentals that you must have from your perspective to be an effective leader. Are there some don't do's to being a leader? I don't know. Can you share any of those? Really bad traits of a bad leader.
You know, I think a leader that doesn't listen is one of the worst things that a leader can fall a victim to, is thinking they've got it all figured out. The best leaders, again, are the best communicators, but communication is not just talking. Communication is also listening. And it is one of the easiest skills that we have that we can use, that we can develop. And it is one of the best ways that we can grow as leaders and we can grow in our organizations is to listen. And I like to always use the picture of, in my presentations, I always tend to use this one slide, which is a lion, or it's a little kitten actually looking in the mirror and sees a lion. We've probably all seen that, right? And that has a nice perspective, which is we need to be confident. We need to see ourselves as more than we are. But there's also this myth misperception to that, which is sometimes we may think we're coming across as that cute little adorable kitten, and we're actually coming across as that lion. And so we need people in our lives that we'll listen to that are willing to tell us the hard things. It's kind of like when you go to a hotel and you have what we call the honesty mirror, that small little mirror that shows everything that we don't always like to look at. So for me, it's my spouse. You know, I have somebody in my life that's willing to share with me directly how it is with no fear. I can't put that on my direct reports because that puts them in an uncomfortable position. But as a leader, do I have somebody at my level, maybe it's my spouse, my business partner, someone that's willing to tell me how it is and that I'm listening to them? Because without it, that reflection, we lose a lot.
Richard, how often do you listen? Like, can you go out to your employees every day and say, tell me what's going on, tell me what's on your mind, or is it quarterly?
Absolutely. I think there's with that, you do things both in a strategic way. In other words, you do some strategic communication, but also you do things informally. That's where a lot of growth happens as well. One great leader that I talked to recently, she shared that she's a leader, but she's also a manager, and how she balances that tension is she's learned to lead in the morning and manage in the afternoon. And it's not a perfect thing. She doesn't divide the calendar 4 and 4, but she's found that when she comes in the office and she leads first, she gets to know her people, she makes the rounds and talks to them. By the time she makes it back to her office, she's able to focus more on the management tasks for the day. She finds that she's less interrupted. Sometimes her to-do list actually changes because of what she learned as she made the rounds around the office.
No, that's a great way to approach it for sure. And people always remember that last encounter you had with them.
Absolutely.
And so if you're going to manage them and the last thing they remember prior to that was that you were, you know, supporting them and leading them, they're probably more willing to follow your directions when it comes to
managing.
That's
right. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's a great. And you can implement that into your household strategy too. You come home, tell your kids and your wife how much you love them. And then later on, you know, maybe ask for a favor. But don't ask for that favor as soon as you walk in the door,
right?
See, I normally just walk in and I say, yes, dear, what can I do for you?
You're an excellent follower then at home, right? We know who the leader is.
No leadership happening with me there.
And leadership, you know, it's a buzzword we hear all the time. Whether you're a small startup or you're a Fortune 500 company, it's super important to have effective leaders. And you mentioned this a minute ago. Being a good leader is surrounding yourself with other good leaders, and making sure you're delegating that work appropriately. Is that some of the things you teach some of your clients?
Definitely. You know, when it comes to enabling others to act, the leaders that are best and most effective realize that they've got to get out of the way. They've got to set the vision, set the tone for the organization, help grow the culture, but then they've got to get out of the way, enable others to act and do the work. We have to realize that sometimes there are people on our teams that can do things better than we can. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the best leadership development tools that you have in your organizations today is to delegate. But delegate with a purpose. Find those people that you want to help them grow and align their purpose, their passion, and the skills or the projects that you want them to work on. You know, I had a CEO attend a conference that I did about a year ago. And to this day, I'll never forget this gentleman. Very successful in several car dealerships. By our maybe measurement, we'd say this person's successful. They've reached the pinnacle, so to speak, you know, from the outside in. And yet he came to this workshop I was doing on emotional intelligence. And he said during the break, he called his office and one of his colleagues said, you know, thank you so much for taking time out to go continue to develop yourself. You're successful and yet you still take time to continue developing. Leaders, the best leaders are the best learners.
Always educating, always furthering their knowledge for sure. And back to your other point, if you're comfortable, then you're probably not doing enough to lead your organization. So get uncomfortable, find those new ways to implement leadership or empower those others that are already in your organization, giving them more work, more responsibility, and then sit back. Don't try to micromanage them, right? You know, let them fail or succeed, and then you can coach them along the way. I think another part of this that is very important is you mentioned you have your wife, but what about a mentor or a sponsor or somebody outside of your organization that can help continue your leadership development?
Definitely. And in today's day and age, you know, mentors don't have to be as formal as they once were, where we had a formal mentor-mentee kind of relationship. Mentors can be really across the spectrum, and you can have mentors at different levels. But I absolutely am a big fan of getting some people in your life that are willing to coach you and share with you and not fear giving you that kind of feedback.
And I'll tell you, Richard's one of my mentors.
Is he really?
And sometimes it's just the price of a cup of coffee lunch, and we brainstorm. And
how long you known Richard?
Oh, geez, it's probably been 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Feels like a lifetime, though.
Honest to God. Right. I know. It does seem like a lifetime. The moment I met this guy, I'm like, you know, I want to be on his team.
Nice.
You know, the thing with feedback, I use the word feedback for a second. A lot of us, when we hear the word feedback, what do we think?
People are going to criticize us.
Right. If you come to one of my leadership workshops and you pull me aside and say, hey, Richard, can I give you some feedback about today's workshop? Ooh. the dukes go up because I get nervous.
You're going to judge me. You're going to critique me.
That's right. But I heard a definition of feedback once, and I've taken it and kind of added my own spin. Feedback is simply this. It's information in the present about something in the past that may affect my future.
Huh.
Information in the present about something in the past that may affect my future. So if you were to say, hey, Richard, love today's workshop. Listen, next time you do that workshop, would you spend a little bit more time on leaders versus managers? I think that would really, really go well. Hmm. Fantastic. You've just given me feedback. Now I have a decision to make. Do I apply it? That may affect my future, may make my sessions better. Or do I say, what do you know?
Right.
Right. And so that's where, but if we eliminate the word feedback, sometimes we can give people that information to really help them grow and give it over that hump of the word feedback.
Well, maybe I'm getting some coaching here because when my people come to me and say, I'd like to give you some feedback, the first thing I say is, sure, but remember, I'm a first degree black belt.
That's right.
And then the feedback doesn't seem to follow through. So perhaps I should take a different approach to that.
Possibly.
Yeah, right. Don't tell them about your black belt. Just let them give you the feedback and then digest it from there.
Got
for
it.
Sure. So another phrase you mentioned a minute ago is emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Can you explain that to us, please?
So emotional intelligence, it's also been one of those buzzwords, been out for a while. But the reality is emotional intelligence has been around as long as humans have been around. The reality is that we have emotions, but many of us were taught to check our emotions at the door when we walk in the office, to put our personal lives at home and our business lives on at the office. But the reality is that I don't stop being who I am when I walk in the doors of my office in the morning. I bring all of that into the office, my emotions, my personality, all those things. And so emotional intelligence is about using your emotions to help you understand yourself better and others better as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really made popular by Daniel Goldman, who did an article back in 1998, Harvard Business Review. It's a great article if you want to search for it, where he published the findings of some research he did across 15 global companies where they found good leaders and also great leaders and great organizations. And the one factor that really differentiated these leaders was their emotional competencies. That was the one thing that really let these leaders stand apart from their peers.
So how do you know if your emotional intelligence level is on par or not? I mean, how do you gauge yourself?
Well, there's a lot of different tests out there. One of the ones that I recommend, and I do some training around this, is a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0 or EI 2.0. It's by Bradbury and Greaves. It's about $15 or so on Amazon, and it comes with an assessment where you can gauge yourself on your emotional intelligence across four areas. Yourself, self-awareness, self-management, how do you use that to manage yourself better? In response to these questions, how socially aware are you? And then how do you manage your relationships? Mm-hmm. And so with that assessment, it's about $15. You take it once, you can see your scores. And then the book gives you all kinds of wonderful strategies around competencies that you can grow and develop in your emotional intelligence. Because one of the things that we find is that IQ, we know, is set at birth. But EQ, or emotional quotient, can be developed over time. So even if you find that you've got low emotional intelligence or you've got some areas to grow, it's a great thing. It's a skill that you can continue to grow over time.
Yeah, you want to get those tools to help you better that
Absolutely.
Emotional intelligence. So you can be emotional intelligence factor 100 or whatever you want it to be, and then you can begin to help others going through. You can recognize what they're going through and that, emotional intelligence, I think, also plays back into a little bit of that Army career that I had, they teach us, how to go to war, but then when you get there, it all gets thrown out the window.
That's
and then you got to kind of relearn all of yourself. There were some guys who were unable to adapt. Me, I was able to, after a few missions, able to, get those feet underneath me and then emotional intelligence became stronger.
And how'd you do that? What was your process to
self-awareness was a huge part of that.
Really?
Recognizing it first, realizing that I'm hurting myself by not grabbing on to these emotions and conquering them from within.
Mm-hmm.
You could have someone shooting at you or you could have a general yelling at you. Either one, I need to keep my emotions in check.
That's right.
And the more you can do that, you can then build. So self-awareness, I think, is the first part of that.
Wow.
But for anyone who's seeking these helps through emotional intelligence or leadership help, all of that has to kind of come from within. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And meditation really takes you there faster. Mm-hmm. There are three aspects of a person you always want to improve: mental capacity, emotional capacity, and physical capacity. Most of the physical can be done in a gym or another mm-hmm. exercise. Mm-hmm. Mental capacity and emotional capacity is really done best in meditation, at least from an accelerating standpoint, if you really want to get there, because you have to connect. And when you do that, as they say, you're going to meet some demons and you may not be proud of them. But the reality is it's part of who you are. And if you own that and say, okay, that's okay. From a spiritual standpoint, God or nature created you. So that's part of a divine plan. And I don't mean this to be a religious conversation, but if you accept that everything's the way it's supposed to be, but can be improved upon, you're going to be way ahead of everybody else.
Can you kind of split that up for us and explain to our listeners the difference between emotional capacity and mental capacity?
Sure, sure. It's almost the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is your database of facts. Wisdom is, what do you do with those facts? So in the mental capacity, you're thinking and you're learning to think clearly, and you're associating things that should be associated, and you're deassociating things that really don't have anything to do with the problem at hand. From an emotional standpoint, and it's important to understand that every emotion we have, with the exception of love, is the result of a mental thought that comes to a conclusion. So whether something is bad or good really is based upon what you thought about it. If you see somebody get shot, that tends to be a horrible thing. But if the camera backs out and you see it's a policeman protecting a mom and her daughter, even though that's a terrible situation, you now feel completely different about it. And so to be able to go in and have, as you said, Ryan, that awareness that these things exist. Now, as guys, we're not very good at this. We want to, you know, if I tell people if we can't eat it, shoot it, or have sex with it, we're really not interested. Women are not that low IQ. They understand that there's more to life than that. So from an emotional standpoint, it's really important to look at it methodically and just accept what's going on, and then saying, okay, does this emotion serve the mental part of my brain, the mental part of my mission? And if it doesn't, you put it aside.
Yeah, and you know, Ryan, going back to what you were saying about, you know, self-awareness really being foundational for everything else, that's one of the reasons I'm really intrigued by the work that Chase does in meditation. And I'm just, you know, getting into this myself a little bit. And that is that with self-awareness, it's taking time out for yourself to listen to yourself. It's the thinking about thinking. And in today's society, we don't do enough of that. And for those of you on the phone, you know, obviously in the car, leaders, we have to have an answer for everything. So we're always giving to others. But when do we stop to, as Ziegler says, fill the tank and, yes, and really stop for ourselves? And so that self-awareness means we've got to take time out. But we're sometimes uncomfortable with being alone. I mean, look around an airport. I fly a lot. In airport, we're all alone, but we're all looking down at our devices. We're uncomfortable with just sitting there, being present, being in the moment.
We can't even go to a restaurant and not look at our devices.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, the thing with that is really we have to take time to be self-aware. And I think that's where meditation, as one of many things, can help us to stop and be self-aware. Because without that, we will not get to that awareness we need to be in touch with those emotions and then use those emotions to help us think better, to manage better, and then help us manage and understand relationships better as a result.
Very well said, for sure.
Ryan, let me mention this. It's kind of a challenge, but it's really an exercise, but it does challenge people when we're talking about mental and emotional. The mental part of our brain tends to be the right side of our brain and the emotional, the left side. And it's always possible I have it backwards. So we tend to, when we problem solve, just use the mental part of our brain. But I challenge everybody to count backwards, not hard, but count backwards in color and not just in one color. Count backwards in different colors. That causes the right brain and the left brain to work at the same problem at the same time. Now, it sounds remarkably easy, but it's not if you want to remember it. You know, start with 10, then move to 12, and then move to 20, and then move to 22 or 28. Don't round off in 10. But that's a great exercise, and it's hard.
I'd run out of colors, I think. More numbers, and there are colors. I only know about 10 colors.
But you'll be surprised, and I will tell you, particularly for the men listening, the women are going to outdo us every day of the week on this. Every day of the week.
I know for sure. For those listeners who may have just joined us, we are talking with Christopher Chase Carey. He's author of Chasing Meditation, and Richard Pillay. He is a learning consultant there for his own company out there serving the market. So if I want to know, I think part of what comes into all this is fear as well.
Big time.
Fear is a big part. Fear of the unknown.
Right.
Fear of what we may have experienced before and not willing to adapt some of these methods to overcome that. What are some of the ways you addressed fear?
There are two emotions, two categories of emotion. There's love and there's fear. Fear is resistance, and it tends to be a conclusion from a thought that's incorrect. Mm-hmm. So you really have to, in a steady, methodical way, go in and look at that fear, and you're going to get scared and you're going to get uncomfortable because we're going to say, what if? What if I do this? What if I do that? People have, they say there's a big fear of people standing up and speaking in public. And that's probably true. And it's mostly about looking ridiculous or looking silly. And that's just not going to happen. Comedians look silly every day of the week.
It's their job.
They make more money than most people.
Yeah.
Right? So you just have to look at that fear and say, there are three steps to it. Number one, you have to absolutely love that fear.
Own it.
Own it.
Yeah.
And own it in a, I absolutely love you for what you're doing. The second piece is, you have to understand where it comes from. There's some part of your subconscious mind, and that's what I teach in advanced and accelerating forms of meditation, is to access that, that has had some kind of event, real or imaginary, that your subconscious mind really believes in, that's created that fear. And then the third part is to say, okay, well, gee, that really doesn't apply today. I can tell you, guaranteed, almost 98% of the people I work with that have a fear of flying or fear of heights at some point slipped off a mountain in leather sandals. And maybe it was 2,000 years ago, maybe it was 50,000 years ago. I don't know. But I have a conversation with their subconscious mind and I say, is that really realistic today? Mm-hmm. No, I shop at REI. I've got the best equipment possible.
Yeah,
I go to the North Face outlet up in Dawsonville. So that's not going to happen. And you have that conversation and you're like, okay, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But you still have to say, okay, fear, I love you. I thank you. And they're going to put you aside.
Right.
And then that fear is gone.
Very well said. And one of the things that we used a lot in the Army was fear, false evidence appearing real.
Mm. Wow.
And so, because that's what it is. You're putting your thoughts, your kind of feelings on something based upon what's experienced you have had in the past. And so you're already assuming an outcome.
Yes.
It may be completely different from what you are about to experience.
And Ryan, this is one of the most critical success factors of people that are extremely successful in life, whether it's in marriage, parenting, business, sports, entertainment, is they see something that scares them. And my brother, Kevin, who's a federal judge, says it best. Whenever he had a challenge in his life, he ran toward it.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared the hell out of him until he went through it. And then he was 50 times better than he was
the day before.
And I imagine if you did not do that in combat, you would not have come home alive.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, I was trained to hear gunfire and then to run to the gunfire.
Wow.
As opposed to run away or duck and take cover.
This, wow.
Where's the, you would hear something and it was the distance, the direction, and the description. And that's the first three things you would begin to recite to your teammates there. So, but fear is something it happens.
It does.
Feeling
it does.
That your heart rate goes up.
Sure.
You start to sweat. You can't control it. And then once it gets a hold of you, it's almost like a wave that you just got to ride out.
Right.
And so don't let that wave manifest. Do not get caught up in this whirlpool of fear.
Sure.
And master those emotions, and you can find yourself coming out the other side 50 times stronger.
Yeah, and the best example I can recommend is one that we've all had. You want to go out on a date with that girl of your dreams, or you want to go out on a date with that guy of your dreams, and the heart rate starts and the blood pressure goes up and you start to sweat and your vision starts to get tunneled. Well, do you gut through that fear?
Yes.
And get to what's on the other side, or do you back away?
Go home and hide under
go
the covers.
Go home and hide.
Yeah,
your winners don't go home and hide.
No, they do not. And what about for you, Richard? How do you teach fear, or how do you teach leaders to overcome fear?
Well, I think in many ways, it's the same way as you go at it directly. You're intentional in terms of what you go after. You start to really use your self-talk through self-awareness to ask yourself, how realistic is this? Going back to the analogy of people getting up in front and speaking in public, it's the number one fear, and number two fear is snakes. So if you happen to be fearful of both things, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But the
really
reality is,
big snakes.
That's right.
Really big snakes.
Thank God we're not in Florida with the pythons.
Yes.
But the reality is, when you think about that, is using that same analogy, how realistic is it that you're really going to go out there and do a bad job? And people want to hear what you have to say, and so you've got to really think about how realistic that fear is. And that's where the emotions come in, is talking to yourself about the reality is what is it that's really driving the fear? So for example, if I'm going to go do a workshop and I find myself getting a little bit nervous the night before, I'll ask myself some questions. Why am I nervous? Did I not prepare enough? Have I not known the content well enough? You know, so where is this driving from? And if it's because maybe, well, you know, I've been traveling a lot, I haven't studied. Okay, then let's take a little bit more time out to study and deal with that fear head on and be thankful for it, because it is a cue, it's an indicator, but not let it drive us.
Right. And I've heard of this also called the fear loop, that a lot of soldiers are not able to get out of this fear loop.
That's right.
So they find themselves in combat, being shot at, and this emotion kind of comes over, but they can't graduate from that emotion. They can't see the other side. And I've heard, I don't know if there's scientific evidence behind this, but that's where a lot of PTSD comes into play, because
it's got to be. You can't process it. If you can't process it, you're stuck in it.
Yeah, and you're stuck in that fear loop. Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of the processing is also being willing to talk to others as well, right? So you're not going to go out and tell everybody your fears, but do you have that confidence? Do you have somebody who can quickly pull aside and say, hey, you know, I don't know why, but I'm just really nervous about, or I'm fearful of this idea or this transaction or whatever it is you're facing, because in our mind, that loop begins to play, and that begins to become a pretty big voice. But when we talk things out, sometimes we realize, wait a second, that's just not rational, you know? So I think it's part of it being self-aware, taking that time out. But sometimes, again, going back to communication, talking through it. Big private.
You know, Ryan, you brought up PTSD. Last year, I worked with Victor Crouch and his team down at Fort Benning. They helped a lot of people, young men primarily, with PTSD. And these are, you know, I would say kids in their 20s, but my God, they're super adults and super athletes. Going through that fear, it's really a healing process. And particularly for men, you know, we want to be Spartans. We want to be flawless. And there's, I've never been in combat, fortunately. Fortunately, brave men like you and women have done that for me to keep my family and I safe. And there's got to be no real book on how to deal with that. Well, meditation and healing aspects of it really do it. It lets people own it and understand this is a terrible, terrible tragedy and traumatic event that happened to you. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And thank God you did that. And we're going to make you better.
Right. And I think it was you who mentioned last time you were in the studio about the number of thoughts that go through your head per day.
Right. 50 or 60,000.
Amazing. I'm still thinking about that. But you choose not to act on, you know, 98% of them.
Right.
Why do you choose all of a sudden to hang on this one thought about fear or about failure or about whatever it may be?
Because there's an emotional connection to it.
Yes.
That's what gets us.
Right. Yeah. And so this is all kind of coming together here about leadership, about helping others, about, you know, being that good servant leader, as we talk about a lot here in Business Radio X. That's a great sign of a good business person, is that they're a servant leader.
Right.
They don't give back because they want something back in return. It just makes their heart and their mind happy and fulfilled by giving to others.
Absolutely.
And I think that's just a great way to do
that. It's really what it's all about. You know, so many people, I know that Richard trains, there are people that have started their own businesses. They've come out of corporate America. And as you know, when you start to lead a company, the issues are all different. They're very, very different. Mm-hmm. And you may have been a great manager in corporate America, but now all of a sudden the issues are different. Yeah, so how do you learn to do that leadership?
Yeah, the world is different. Business
is different,
right? Everything's different for sure. So let's talk about your typical client over there at your consulting services. Who would it be and how do they normally find you?
Sure. So small to mid-sized businesses that are looking to really grow their organizations, grow the engagement of their employees and their teams, to increase the communication that they have with their teams and better effectiveness overall. Best way to reach me is just my cell phone. It's on the reference sheet today. Also, at RPLA, follow me on Twitter and connect with me that way as well.
When you go in to meet with these organizations, do you just sit down with the C-suite guys or you meet with everybody on the team? How does that look?
I love to first start with the C-suites. I think leadership begins at the top. And if we don't model the way as leaders, then the organization won't join in. And so that's usually what I first start with, is just their team talking about what they'd like to look at to develop further as a team, whether it's their values, their vision, find out about, you know, where some of the pain points are. And then I certainly encourage to do something across the organization, whether it's in phases or what have you. Recently did emotional intelligence for a leader and his team, and the rest of the staff caught wind and they were so excited about what they heard that then they kept asking the CEO, well, when are we going to get the same session? So I flew out there a month later and did the same session for the rest of the organization. And what that did for them is it created a common language. And I think that's so important. But I do believe first in starting with the C-suite. And the reason why is that as leaders, we've got to model the way.
Right.
The worst thing we can do as leaders is send our team to a workshop, because that gives the impression that they're broken and I've got it all together. And it's not about being broken or getting it together.
That's
but it's
the worst
message.
Thing when the big guy or big gal doesn't show
up. Absolutely.
It is the worst thing.
Absolutely.
And how long does an engagement look like from you when you begin working with
it? It really depends. I work around the client. I'm flexible in terms of what their needs are. So whether it's an hour, whether it's a half day, whether it's a full day, whether it's a multiple time engagement, I'm willing to work around the client and their needs to make sure that we're ultimately helping them become better at what they do.
Right. And do you sometimes find yourself going back for a visit?
Absolutely.
They were so successful or really embraced your teaching so much, you may visit again 6 months, a year later?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's definitely good.
I want to make sure that they're applying what they're learning, because the reality is that we all live busy lives. So the minute we leave a workshop, we're going back to reality. And so I'm very big on that transfer of knowledge. Whatever you learned in the workshop, whatever your takeaways were, what's your plan to implement that? And whatever I can help in doing that, whether it's some coaching one-on-one or some additional follow-up and accountability, I definitely help out in that way.
That's fantastic. So it sounds like you've got it covered out there.
Absolutely.
People can definitely use your services. And you can go to his phone number, 678-319-6268 or 786-348-3098 to get him signed up to come out to your organization and have him begin to teach leadership skills to your whole team.
That's right.
Not just the people who are in the leadership position, for sure. Right. So if there's anything we can do here at Business Radio X to help further your message, amplify your voice, please let us know. We would certainly be happy to do so.
Well, appreciate it. Love to be back. Love the invitation. And it's been great to share these thoughts with everyone.
Very good. Now, one final question for you. When you're not changing the world of leadership or out there influencing businesses, what do you like to do in your off time to stay motivated and inspired?
You know, I like to read a lot, for sure, and definitely spend time with my family, my wife, my two daughters. I get a lot of lessons from them about leadership. Stephen Covey said, a great quote said, "We judge ourselves on our intentions, but we judge others on their behaviors."
Ooh.
And I see that firsthand with my daughter sometimes. When my older daughter hits her younger sister and says, "But Dad, I didn't mean to," she's wanting me to judge her on her intentions, but I saw the behavior.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of enjoyment from them. Going back to that servant leadership, I really subscribe to that philosophy a lot in my own life. And so spending time with them, that really engages and motivates me to move forward.
Yeah, it's great. And so do you have Chasing Meditation on your nightstand at this time?
It is at this time. That's
right.
That's right.
I'm reading it
already.
It's a really good book. I haven't read it myself because I have not gotten a copy.
I think we'll make that happen.
So very good.
There you go.
Thank you so much. And we appreciate it. Like Richard coming on in. Please stay tuned for more from Richard Pillay and his leadership consulting business. You'll find all his links connected on our website. And for you, Chase Carey, you got another book in the works. Are you working on anything new these days?
You know, I do have several new books in the work, and actually in the works. And I just came up with a new one today. But right now I am doing some other things. I do ghostwriting as well. So I'm ghostwriting a book for Dr. Wells, actually.
Oh,
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah,
on the air.
Sure.
And I'm editing another book for a local entrepreneur. But
so you're a writer.
I'm a writer. I'm a communicator.
Yeah.
I love empowering other people. It's always driven me crazy how confusing everybody thinks tough solutions have to be. Mm-hmm. The hardest problems have the simplest solutions.
Is there any book that you're currently reading or could recommend to our listeners?
I am. I'm reading Elon Musk's book.
That's fascinating.
It is fascinating. A guy that had probably a remarkably tough childhood at one point, and he doesn't talk about it, which I think is really important, because we all have tough spots. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. In fact, Dr. Wells, her books is going to be about people that have overcome very, very dark challenges in their life, but have still been super successful.
Mm-hmm.
But Elon Musk, at the same time, he completely thinks differently than the rest of us, and he's going to take us there.
Yeah.
So he doesn't see any difference between his dreams and what he can do.
Right. Some folks say he will take us to Mars.
He will. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
That.
He will put it out there. Well, if you're interested in getting Chase's most recent book, Chasing Meditation, the Step-by-Step Guide to a Stress-Free Life Through Meditation, it's available on Amazon.
Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. You can also go to my website, ChasingMeditation.com, and you'll see a link right there.
Good deal. So thank you so much for taking the time out to join us.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
What about you? What do you like to do when you're off time?
I got to tell you, I love to travel. I love the
favorite travel destination?
Well, my dream travel destination is going to be Tahiti.
Oh, man. Me and you both.
Oh, yeah. You know, and my wife, coincidentally, is a travel agent. She owns a cruise planners franchise. She left corporate America and became a travel agent. So I'm thinking, you know, there was some divine intervention here.
I think so, too.
And, of course, I love the American Southwest. That's just
Taos. out there in New Mexico.
Scottsdale.
I've spent some time out there. It's fantastic. I get to do some traveling this week. I'm going to Nashville.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm going to do some broadcasting up there tomorrow. I know it's not the Southwest or our lovely Tahiti.
Nashville is such a great town. It is such a great town.
Yeah, I'll be heading up there this week, so looking forward to that. So look forward to having you back in the studio again
soon. Love to come back.
If you have some more great news to share with us or some more compelling guests to bring along, please do send them our way. We'd love to feature them on the show. And listeners, as a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at Business Radio X and on Facebook, Business Radio X. If your company is doing something interesting to genuinely serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the website at businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.